Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market. A New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
This is Michael Harlan Turkel, host of The Food Scene. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz. Each week, this show features a U.S. or international location and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the cuisine and culture of a place. Today, I'm happy to welcome Shane Mitchell back to the show. Shane is a contributing editor for Savor Magazine and is here to discuss Savor's next great food city. So, Shane, why don't you tell me where the next great food city is?
Hi, Brianna. Yes, we think that the next great food city is Santiago, Chile.
Mm-hmm. And why is that?
Well, we've already heard so much about the chefs in other Latin American cities like Lima and Sao Paulo and Buenos Aires. And Santiago has lagged behind these other cities until the most recent generation of chefs and restaurateurs started to take pride in the ingredients available to them locally, rather than importing French cheeses and Italian pasta and even Peruvian sushi. So I'm always looking for emerging places, and that's why I think Santiago is poised for the next.
And how would you, when you were visiting and your insights, how would you describe the national cuisine of Chile?
Well, it's different from other parts of South America. For instance, the national cuisine is, to start at the top, it's milder than Mexican, for instance. Chileans don't like as much heat in their version of salsa, which is called pebre, but they do like empanadas. Merquén is on every table, which is a traditional Mapuche condiment of dried and smoked red chilies and coriander, which is ground to a fine powder. And with a Humboldt current sweeping along its Pacific coast, fish is always on the menu. You can walk through the fish market in Santiago and see everything from oysters and mussels and abalone and tuna and congrio eel. In fact, the poet Pablo Neruda, who is from Santiago, even wrote an ode to congrio eel chowder.
And I mean, you mentioned like the seafood influence, but I know that Santiago is kind of located right in the center of a very long country from north to south. So does that central location have kind of impact what food you're seeing? It's like, does everything kind of come into the center and you pull from all parts of the country?
It does now. It didn't originally. The place was very regionalized. But now when you're in the capital city, you can see a lot of ingredients that are coming from the far south, as far south as Patagonia. And you can also see things coming in from the Atacama Desert. So I'd say yes, probably that's the case.
I get a real sense that one reason that Santiago is one of the next great food cities is because there's a lot going on there. So what is the dining scene like? Are there lots of like farm to table, or is it like a street food? Like, what's going to happen if you go out in the city?
Yeah, it fully ranges from fast food to high end dining. I mean, the Chileans, for instance, love their hot dogs, which is loaded with more toppings than you can find in North America. There's what they call the completo, which is topped with tomatoes, relish, pickled carrots, sauerkraut. So you can find those on the street in downtown, but it goes all the way up to some of the finest dining in South America right now. They also have a great tradition, two different great traditions of that are adopted. One is the soda fountain, which is called a Fuente de Soda. So you can go into a soda fountain in Santiago and have a great hamburguesa or hamburger. or you can also go into some of the confiterias, which are like pastry shops, and have a classic European afternoon tea.
Well, speaking of some of these restaurants, one that you spend a lot of time in your article is Barago. And you talk about the restaurant, but also the chef. So maybe you can tell me a little bit about them.
Okay. Well, I met Rodolfo Guzman about 3 years ago when I was passing through Santiago on the way to Patagonia. And he's incredibly passionate about sourcing Chilean ingredients from the Atacama Desert, from the coast near Valparaiso, from indigenous communities in Valdiviana. His favorite word is amazing. He's a pretty humble guy, but he can get really intense while talking about wild mushrooms or yogurt or a weird little plant sticking out of the rocks on the tide line. Hanging out with him is like a botany lesson. And when you go into Borgo, the dining room is really casual, but you can see the open kitchen from every table in that restaurant, and the menu is set from a roster of over 700 seasonal dishes that he and his team have created.
700.
700. And that's dialing back. They used to have more. It's better than opera.
Wow. And, I mean, tell me a little bit more about what you had in his restaurant, maybe his philosophy behind those 700 dishes that he puts together.
Well, it's based on what he can get at the time. Mm-hmm. You have to remember that Santiago is still very much an emerging destination. So the way he sources things is he's actually got to go out and get them himself. Foraging isn't just, part of the... It's real there. It's because, and he said to me, I have to do this because I can't get ingredients otherwise. So essentially, whatever he's gathering is coming straight from his expeditions, whether it's onion flowers or oxalis or a rose that blooms in the desert. And it's really fascinating just to watch what's coming into the kitchen over the course of time and over the course of a season.
Yeah, it sounds like one of the reasons that makes it so special is that these are things that you have to go to Santiago and you have to get these items there. You can't just find them elsewhere.
No, not any place else in South America. I mean, you've got to remember that, you know, just how big Chile is, because it's 2,650 miles long as a republic. And it goes in as far as climate changes. It goes from subtropical all the way up to essentially Arctic tundra. So the availability of ingredients is extraordinary.
Mm. And speaking of ingredients, one of the other projects that you mentioned in your article about Barago is the kind of academic food work being done and the databases that they're putting together. So mm-hmm. maybe you could tell us a little bit about that and that effort. But also, is this more for just like a personal exercise, or is this eventually for kind of helping to build a Chilean encyclopedia of food?
Oh, it's very much the second. Rodolfo doesn't do anything just for himself. As I said, he's all about sharing. And what he's doing is he and a team of scientists is spearheading something called Conectas, which is an effort to codify all of Chile's natural resources. They're trying to create a tool to basically document and to quantify all the native cuisine of Chile, from the territory to the people to essentially where it's available at different times of the year. So that it's going to be one of the most elaborate, intensive experiences as far as collaborating with scientists to codify the Chilean pantry.
Well, Savora is pretty, you know, far out ahead on these things, and you like to visit the kind of under-recognized destinations in the world. Do you think that Chilean cuisine or cuisine from Santiago is going to get more worldwide recognition in the coming years?
I hope so. You know, it's funny how these things happen, because a few years ago, Chile and Santiago specifically was definitely not on anybody's bucket list. Mm. If you went, it was because you were hopping to some kind of destination experience in either Patagonia or up in the desert, you know, possibly taking a cruise ship out of Valparaiso to go to the Antarctic. But you weren't really stopping in Santiago. But that's really begun to change. And the more that people hear about the city, the more people are going to want to stop. I mean, it's right in the Central Valley, so it's surrounded by amazing vineyards. And there's a very interesting, for instance, there's a very interesting garage wine movement there, where there's a whole new generation of young winemakers turning out really extraordinary small batch productions of interesting wine.
Well, hold that thought on the wine, because we are going to get into that. In your personal experience, do you think that more and more that it's becoming a requirement for people who want to take a vacation or who want to travel, that the destinations that they're choosing have to have some kind of food culture going on that people want to experience?
I think food culture enhances any kind of travel. I mean, there are certainly people who are making it their mission to seek out places like this, who are bona fide sort of fans of high-end food. I've noticed that, for instance, when the World's 50 Best list comes out, there's a huge spike in reservations in places like Santiago. For instance, Rodolfo Guzman was named number 42 on the list this year, and that's changed what's going on in Santiago immediately.
Very interesting. And what about, I know you mentioned this in your article as well, just a note on it, but the like food festivals too, like how that plays into the food tourism aspect.
Oh yeah, food festivals make it make a lot of things accessible in a very short period of time. So you're getting to meet chefs, meet producers, taste the food right there in the moment. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely helping places like that.
Let's take a quick break, but stay with us. When I come back, we'll be talking to Shane Mitchell from Savora Magazine more about Santiago, Chile.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
All right, we are back. I'm Brianna Kurtz, and you're listening to Native on Heritage Radio. And today I'm talking to Shane Mitchell from Savora Magazine. So, Shane, I want to ask, as far as people getting excited about this cuisine and then going home and trying to replicate it, do you think that there might be a barrier of difficulty considering so much of it is based on local ingredients?
Actually, Brianna, there are a lot of similarities in the preparation of a lot of the recipes that appear in the Savora story. Mm-hmm. There's this wonderful, wonderful dish that's a pork shank braised in its own juices, and it's from a soda fountain called Las Cabras. And I found that it's easy enough to substitute most of the ingredients. you might want to try and order some Merken, which is the spice mix that I was mentioning. And usually, I'm pretty sure Calyastans has it. So it's not that difficult these days to locate a lot of these ingredients, even though they're not necessarily available normally in your local grocery store. On the other hand, the things that, for instance, Rodolfo Guzman is making, no, there's no way you can reproduce some of his things.
Of course. Well, yes, you're talking about the spice-rubbed pork shanks in the magazine. Let's talk about a couple more of the recipes. What are some of your favorites?
Well, I really like the idea of pebre, which was, it's as common on tables in Santiago as ketchup is here. And essentially, that it's a very mild type of salsa. And it just adds you can dip it with bread or you can, dredge it on different dishes. One of the recipes I really loved also was a salad of celery that was pickled in lemon and avocado. Very simple. Then there was another dish which we also included. It's called marinated celery and avocado salad. You can find that on the website. But I also really love this braised beef stew with garlic cream. It's perfect for this time of year when you want something really hearty. Because when I was in Santiago, it was their winter time. So now that we've come full circle, now's the time to have something just absolutely tasty like that.
I think anything with the words garlic cream is, for sure, that's going to be good.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I wanted to ask you a question about the pebre. It says to use all-purpose flour in the recipe. So, I've never thought about putting flour in my salsa. So can you explain to me, how that changes it? What's the thought behind that?
It's just a thickener.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
It just looks really creamy and delicious. Let's talk about, I would think of more the preferred cooking method. When I think of Southern American cuisine, I think of a lot of fire. Do they like to grill a lot there? Or are they more into like you mentioned the fish, grilling that? Is there a preferred way to cook in the kitchen?
No, I don't think it's that so much. I mean, it's not like asado is in Argentina. It's more the tradition is much more European, and because fish is much more prevalent than meat, you're wanting it to cook it in finer ways. For instance, there's this restaurant called Liguria where they had this wonderful fish cheek stew, so that's a long simmering process. That doesn't mean that Chileans don't go out and barbecue in summer, but I just found everything to be, long and richly prepared.
Well, let's talk about beverages now. You kind of mentioned the garage wine movement that's happening there. So tell me a little bit more about your experience of what you were drinking and what you saw.
Okay. Well, obviously, Chile's been known as a big producer for a long time, but I did find a thriving community of garagistes and rebel small batch vintners coming on the scene. The output is so small, however, it really sometimes doesn't leave the country. But you can go into a basic bar. There's a wonderful one right near the vegetable market, and order something called the Terremoto, which is Spanish for earthquake. And it's essentially an unfiltered white wine that is topped with pineapple ice cream, and it's served in a 1-liter glass, and then there's a sort of lurid splash of grenadine poured all over the top of that. And I kid you not, it sounds nasty, but it is actually pretty extraordinary to drink.
Well, it certainly sounds interesting. I'm trying to visualize it, and I'm do I want grenadine in my wine and ice cream? I don't know.
it's amazing. It's like the best slushy you've ever had.
Wonderful.
Now that's kind of as rock gut bottom as you can get. But don't forget that Chile and Peru have had a long standing argument about where the pisco sour was invented. So you can actually have an elegant pisco sour in some of the much more refined bars. And then, again, there are restaurants and bars that are specifically for tasting different types of wine in Santiago itself. So you can go and have a flight of really great wines to try in some of the bars that are included in the story on Sabor.
Well, we touched in the beginning on the many reasons why Santiago is the next great food city. And, you know, just lots of things are happening and changing are changing there. So I wanted to talk a little bit about kind of the political situation in the economy and kind of growing out of the kind of the darker history that Chile has faced, and also looking at how food is playing a part in taking the country forward. What did you see on the streets and people you talked to?
Okay, well, let's step back a little bit to Santiago's dark past, which you do reference. I mean, during Augusto Pinochet's dictatorship, there were bread lines, and there were soup kitchens, and there were deliberate food shortages. People don't forget that quickly. But the main markets are now full. It's worth visiting La Vega on a morning when the produce is being delivered from the countryside. And, you know, Chile's economy is booming right now. So that does definitely play a part in what kind of food you're going to be able to find there. I find that food is one of the most powerful ways of having a conversation with people. But the other thing that was fascinating to me was I got to sit in a bar on a night that Chile was playing Mexico during the playoffs for the Copa America, which is one of the biggest and oldest soccer tournaments in the world. So, and I'm sitting there watching, and everybody's like shouting and ringing bells and screaming. And the photographer, Araceli Paz, who is from Santiago, she was looking around in amazement. She said, "Chileans are not like this. We don't do this kind of stuff. We don't wear goofy hats and wave flags and run around the streets celebrating." She said, "This is very, very new to us." So for me, that was very exciting to be able to see that kind of thing happening. And ultimately, what was really cool is Chile actually won the whole Copa America.
Oh, Shane, you always make me jealous getting to, I mean, of course, any important part of any Southern American country is their soccer culture as well as their food culture. So.
Oh, completely.
Sounds like a great memory. Well, last time you were on the show, we were talking about Tasmania, and you always have the craziest, most amazing adventures. So where else have you been hitting up lately, and what's the status of your book?
Oh, thanks for asking. I just got back from Sicily, where my editor-in-chief, Adam Sachs, was having me look at the types of sandwiches that are being produced on the streets in Palermo. And I am about to head to France in a couple of weeks to look at a refugee camp in Calais and what they're cooking there. The book is coming out next year. It's 10 Speed Press, Penguin Random House, and they've set a pub date, so I'm very excited about that. It's October 25 next year.
1 year out.
Yep, 1 year from almost today.
Are we going to see some of those upcoming trips of yours in Sabor?
Yes, you'll definitely see the one in Palermo. But the story in Calais is for the book.
And where can people find out more about you and keep track of all of your escapades?
Well, I think probably Twitter's the best, or Instagram is the best way. But, of course, on the website for Sabor as well.
Of course. All right, Shane. Well, thank you for joining us. And I'm glad I caught you in between trips to talk about Santiago and your article in Sabor. Just a quick note to listeners, the Good Taste Awards issue is no longer available on newsstands, but we will post the link to Shane's article on our website on Heritage Radio. And of course, you can always go to Savoy's website for all kinds of tips and tricks and delicious recipes and exciting adventures. So thank you again, Shane, for joining us.
Brianna, thanks for having me.
All right, that's all for Native this week. Thanks to our sponsor, Fairway Markets, and we'll be back next week talking about one of the staples of Southern food culture, oysters. Don't miss it. Be sure to tune in live right here every Thursday morning at 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.